everyone. Bunny Terry here with the Life-Saving Gratitude Podcast. I'm excited that you're here, and this is a really special show today. We're talking about gratitude through grief. And Johanna's going to give us a little disclaimer because this is a really tough topic that we're talking about today.
Yeah, we have such a great episode for you today, but we definitely wanted to give a quick disclaimer and trigger warning before the beginning of the episode because our guest is going to be talking about suicide and self-harm. And of course, that is a very sensitive topic. And if you know if this is a trigger for you or something that you would rather not hear discussed, please feel free to skip this episode. And also, we wanted to make sure everyone knew that there are resources out there for you if you or anyone you know is experiencing thoughts of suicide or self-harm. Please be sure to reach out to these resources. If you're in the New Mexico area like we are, you can always call the New Mexico Crisis and Access Line toll-free anytime at 1-855-NM-CRISIS. That's 1-855-662-7474. And if you are outside the New Mexico area, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is also available 24 hours and completely anonymous, is 1-800-273-8255. Please, please seek help if you need it. Thank you.
I want to introduce all of our listeners today to my great friend, Amber Hell. Amber and I met in sort of interesting circumstances. She came to a training, a Keller Williams Bold training. And Amber is, you know, sometimes you run into people, she's decidedly much younger than I am. And yet we immediately bonded and had stories to share with each other. And I'm just going to... I got to say, I sat down at the table and Amber was this, you know, sometimes you look around the table and some people just have more of a presence than others. And Amber had this really beautiful, I think relatively new tattoo, right? And I admired it. And then she told me about it. So Amber, can you tell our listeners what that was about?
I had gotten a tattoo and it was 2 months old when you and I met. It was in memory of my son that had died by suicide 5 months before.
And when you told me that, I thought if I had lost my son 5 months earlier, I would be under the bed. I wouldn't be at this gathering, which was all about mindset and about, you know, just learning a new way to think that helped us to be successful professionally and personally. I was so struck by your bravery and it was I'm just telling you, I don't have words for how that was.
It was a pretty powerful day for me too, Bunny. You inspired me that day because you shared your story about being a stage 4 cancer survivor. And I thought all the things that you thought about me, I thought about you. I couldn't believe you were there in this class. It just really... it really struck me. You really, really inspired me that day.
Well, it was a powerful day, and I'm so grateful for that. But tell us, you know, we could talk about our experience there for hours. But I want, part of our goal here is to, we want to seek answers. We want to talk about mindset and gratitude, and we want to share what we know as experts in our own lives. You know, I say over and over, I'm not an expert at anything except what worked for me. And I keep repeating this phrase that I heard from on a Brené Brown podcast where she said, we want to help people write a brave new ending. And I got to tell you, I don't know anybody who's done that better than you have, Amber. And so tell us about that. Tell us whatever you would like for us to know about your son who died of suicide at 13, which is unthinkable. Yeah. And yet here you are living like you're an expert at how to Thank live you. Your own life.
Man, Thad was incredible. He was 13 years old, like you said. We moved to New Mexico when he was 12. And 2 weeks after we moved to New Mexico, he decided to try out or run for student council. He had been on student council in sixth grade and fifth grade at his elementary school in Wyoming. But he hadn't, we'd only been there 2 weeks. And he was driven. He was determined. He was going to do it. He wrote this amazing speech. He had these long, curly locks of hair. And in his speech, he said that he could be elected to student council for his dashing good looks. And he ran his hands through his hair, and yeah, he hammed it up pretty well. He was elected unanimously to student council. And so that was pretty cool. We were like, we breathed a sigh of relief. As parents, you know, moving at the age of 12, moving a kid, that's a really difficult age for kids. And, you know, when he came to this new school, we decided we wanted to make sure he was able to go to this school for a few weeks before summer break started so that hopefully he'd make some friends. So when he got on student council, we breathed a sigh of relief. Okay, that is fine. The next year was a good year. He had lots of friends. He was constantly busy with student council. He was also the volleyball manager. And we thought he was just fine. Then that summer, he started getting a little bit distant, and he started getting quite a bit of attitude. And honestly, I was a teenager once, and I just thought it was hormones. You know, he was wanting to be more of an independent kid instead of just a boy, I guess. And so we didn't think too much of it. By October, it was so bad that he was constantly fighting with us. He was constantly in his bedroom. And one Sunday, I had asked him to clean his room, and I went to check on him a couple hours later. And his room, I'm sure you've seen a teenager's room before, it was a disaster. And he was not cleaning it. He was laying on his bed playing with his phone. So I was like, give me your phone right now. And we had an agreement that if I paid for his phone, I got to look at his phone anytime. And I hadn't in a long time. I started looking through it, and I found text messages to a friend of his where he was asking her if she was the one that turned him in for threatening to commit suicide. And immediately I freaked out. My husband was out of town. He was at a training in Texas. And I asked Malachi's my other child. I asked Dad, you know, is this true? Did you really do this? And he, oh, I was just joking. It's no big deal. But then we started looking at more, and we found more and more and more concerning things on there. I found pictures that he had been cutting himself and sharing them with his friends. And his friends were also sharing pictures of cutting themselves. So at that point, I felt it was really important that I go talk to the school. I could take care of my child, but these other parents needed to know what was going on with their kids. And I went to the school, and I just asked them, what's the protocol for if a child threatens to take their life? What's the protocol? Why did I not get a call from you guys? And it was excuse after excuse after excuse. But I talked to the school counselor. The counselor assured me that Brad was just fine and that it was probably just he was looking for attention. And so I said, okay, but we decided to go ahead and take him to the doctor. And when he was speaking with the doctor, it became very clear that he had anxiety and depression. And so his doctor decided, maybe we do need to put that on some medication. So he started him on Prozac. Dad turned back into Brad. I decided to take him to the doctor. And when he was visiting with the doctor, it became very clear that Brad was struggling with some depression and anxiety. His doctor wanted to put him on medication. So he put him on Prozac. I was really concerned about him being on Prozac. There are people in my family that have had some real issues with that drug in particular. But we decided to go for it. And I'd keep an eye on him. And after 3 weeks, Brad was back. He was his normal, smiling, helpful self. He adored his brother. And so he was starting to hang out with his brother again. And he was helping out around the house again. Yes, ma'am.
I think it would be fun if you would tell us about Malachi and so that people know when you say he's hanging around with your other son. I just looked at that picture that you posted this morning of him with Kai. So tell us about Kai.
Okay. So Malachi is 11 now, but he was born when Thad was 8 years old. And Thad had been asking for a brother or sister for, well, since he was about 3. And so he waited very patiently, kind of. And when Malachi was born, it was like Malachi was his child. He helped feed him. He helped bathe him. He changed diapers. He loved doing those things. He just adored his brother. He was always, always with him. He taught him how to ride a bike. he and his brother were pretty inseparable.
So after he took the medication, he got back to interacting with Kai again, right?
Yeah, it was incredible. We like really relaxed. And I think that that's really important for anybody that might be listening, that might be dealing with someone that has anxiety and depression and has had suicidal thoughts. Not everybody with anxiety and depression goes to suicidal thoughts, so I want to make sure that's clear. But if you're dealing with someone with suicidal thoughts and they're on medication, don't breathe that sigh of relief so quickly, I guess. We were told to wait 6 weeks and to keep a good eye on him for 6 weeks. So at 4 weeks, I had just started a career in real estate. It was my 9th day on the job. I was at my office and I just got this feeling I needed to go home. And I was never one of those moms that needed their babies. I have so much respect for those moms that feel that. I just wasn't one of them then. And I just had this feeling I needed to go home right then. I was so new to the business that I thought I had to ask for permission to leave work early. So I did. And I went and picked up my Malachi and we drove home. I lived about 30 minutes from my work. So while we were driving, Malachi was telling me about his day, as he always did. And I was thinking about how much I missed my kids and how much I've been working really hard to get into real estate, to pass the exams. And I'd been out of town. And as soon as I got back, I started working with a brokerage and I was a workaholic. So I was constantly trying to build something. I really wanted to build a successful business. And I realized I'd neglected those relationships. So we were going to have so much fun. I got home, and when I walked in the door, Dad's backpack and shoes were in the living room. It's not that big of a deal, right? It was to me at that time. I was very angry, and I started yelling for him because he knew that he needed to put his stuff in his room. And there was no answer. So I started looking through the house, went room to room, no answer. No, he wasn't anywhere to be found. So then I was even more upset. I was certain that he went to a friend's house without telling me. So I called him on his cell phone, and I heard it ringing in the other room, and I saw that it was charging in my bedroom. So by this point, I was, like, looking back on it, I just don't get angry like that. So it's just so, it's surreal almost to think about that, because I was so mad, and it was something so small. But it was complicated by the fact that he left in my, that what I thought, he left without telling me and didn't leave a note, and didn't take his phone. And about 5 o'clock, my husband got home, and Ryan and I have always had this agreement. We never spoke poorly about one child in front of the other child. So I asked Ryan to go outside with me so that we could talk about that. And as I walked outside, I remembered that I hadn't checked our guest house to see if for some reason he was in our guest house. And so I walked out ahead of him, and that's when I found him. He had taken his life. We didn't know that at the time. My husband was an EMT, and so he immediately started checking on him, and I asked. Shock is such a weird thing, such a weird thing. I asked him if I needed to call 911. And so we did. He got very angry with me for asking that question, but I called 911 and I was not helpful. So he ended up talking to them, and the rest of the day was kind of a whirlwind. About 3 hours later, they were able to determine what had happened and how he took his life. And our lives changed forever that day.
Such a powerful story, and I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Well, and I think this is a good point to take a breath, because you know, when I met you, Amber, you said you were really clear. You know, I've had other friends who have lost family members to suicide, and they say, "Well, I lost my brother. And then there's this awkward moment when you say, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Were they ill?" You were, even at that moment, which when the fact was new, you shared the way that Thad died. And I thought, it's such a brave thing, but it's also so, it's so important for somebody who may have a child or a family member or a friend who's suffering from anxiety and depression, for it not to be a secret. I don't know what that's about. I don't know where that strength comes from. But even, you know, telling this story is so brave. But tell me about that. Tell me about the, you know, it's. I mean, to me, there's not anything. The word that comes to mind is shameful, and I think some people see it as shameful. And you, of course, and Johanna are, you know, Johanna's a social worker, and she worked in the school system.
That's what I was going to say too. You probably saw my facial reaction whenever you were talking about how the school handled it, because that just made me cringe, because I've been a school social worker for almost 5 years, and I mean, I have lost students to suicide. I've lost a personal friend to suicide, but there are clear policies and clear ways that the school is supposed to handle that. And it sounds, I mean, not to derail and go into that, but it did sound like they didn't handle that well in the beginning. And then, I mean, suicide, there's so much you can say, but it affects everyone. And it's just so it's hard for me to hear that. Of course, it's a hard story to tell and hard to hear, but yeah, it just takes me back to some of my experiences too. And oh my gosh, my heart just breaks for you.
Thank you. I could go down a whole rabbit hole as to what happened with that school. I won't. There's a reason we moved to Farmington. I didn't want my younger son in that school system. And just in case there anybody listens to this that's from that area, they have made so many changes for the positive there. So I've heard that it's wonderful there now.
Yeah, and I've worked for schools that did have that great policy, and myself and there's another counselor. You know, we would work with students, and sometimes, I mean, that had still happened. So, and there's no blame that should ever be assigned, or you know, a lot of guilt goes into losing someone that way. And you know, it's just there's just so much to it, but there should never be that guilt or shame, like you're saying. And sometimes we just don't know the depths of what somebody's going through and what they're feeling.
Yeah, well, and I think it's really important that I back up a little bit and say that I wasn't shamed before he died.
Say that again.
I was ashamed before he died. I was embarrassed because of some of the things that he was telling his friends. I didn't want to go to counseling because I didn't want, what would the neighbors think? The neighbors even knew who we were. We just moved to New Mexico, for goodness sake. But yeah, I think that there's just this huge stigma around mental health. And it's so, gosh, when I lost Thad, I realized I hate this word, but it's the only word I can think of, how stupid it was for me to believe that way. My gosh, we all need somebody to talk to from time to time. And him dying made me realize how wrong I was. And it made me, going into a little bit of a spiritual, the day that he died, I felt this need that I needed to go home. And then I didn't go out in my backyard. And that would have been, well, I smoked cigarettes then at the time, and I didn't want my neighbors to know I smoked. So I smoked in my backyard. I didn't go out in my backyard that day. I smoked in my front yard that day. And then that night, while police were there, I very clearly heard something tell me that we couldn't let this destroy us. And I grabbed my husband right then, and I told him we needed to get into counseling, and that we couldn't let this destroy our marriage, and we couldn't let this destroy Malachi. And there was a higher power there helping me understand and grasp with what was going on that day. And I think it became very easy almost for me to move into prevention efforts because it kept me from having to feel the depth of the loss. So very quickly, I started working with, Thad passed away in November. In January, we had forums at the middle school and high school because there had been between 10 and 13 youth suicides in our county that year. And Thad was the youngest, but just by like a few days. We hadn't heard anything. I hadn't heard a thing about this. As a parent, man, I wanted to know that there was this problem going on at the school so that I could prepare my son for it. And so when he died, that was the first thing I told the school I wanted to do was we need to have a chat with these parents. They need to know what's going on. They need to know that there's cutting happening that they don't know about. And they need to know where there's support and help. And the school fought me on that. But the newspaper and the radio stations got involved and it happened. I'm so grateful to those folks for helping make sure that happened. They wanted to talk about the suicide problem at the forums, which was, of course, the big thing. But the other thing that the parents wanted to talk about was the bullying problem at the schools there. Because almost all of the kids that died were bullied. My son was bullied. I had no idea the extent my son was being bullied until I saw his phone. I got this intense sense of purpose. And that's what gave me the strength to tell that story. Because, I mean, to this day, I never want anyone to know what it's like to lose a child to suicide.
Well, it's losing anyone is heartbreaking. Losing your child, I know that, and now Johanna has a baby, so she probably feels the same way. But the one thing I remember my mom saying when I was diagnosed with cancer was, I never want to outlive my children. Yep. And so, and Amber, you suffered the nightmare that none of us want to lose a child.
Yeah.
Because it's just so, we feel like part of our job is to keep them safe. Part of our job is to keep them healthy and well. But you really have amazingly turned this into an opportunity to raise awareness. I mean, you've honored that in the best way possible. I'm just so proud to know you. And excuse me. I'm blown away by the fact that you're willing to talk to our listeners about this. But the things that you did afterwards that raised awareness and honored him, I want you to tell us a little bit about how that all worked.
Okay. So probably about about 3 months after he passed away, I started working with a counseling center. I started seeing them first, and amazing opportunity. Desert View Family Counseling in Farmington, they had a trauma grant at the time. So my family was seen for free because we would experience trauma. Our insurance wasn't accepted there. And so they.
I'm sorry, say that again. What?
I received a trauma grant. So my husband, my son, and I were staying for free at Desert View for a couple of years. And I wanted to give back to that program. I wanted to make sure that there were always funds for that. It's so important. But on top of that, I didn't want it to just go to people that had already lost someone. I wanted money to go to those struggling. Because I wanted to keep them alive. I didn't want to help the people after their loved ones were gone. I don't want your loved one to die. So we started Love for Thad, which was named after my high school friends. All of them changed their profile pictures on the day of Thad's service. And it was just this flower that said Love for Thad.
And, Love for Thad. Yes. I love that.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah. It was beautiful. So it was the easiest thing to name what we were doing. And I had started, I forgot this, I'd started a page called Love for Dad, like immediately after he passed out, or passed out, excuse me, immediately after he passed away. And it just kind of grew. Love for Dad has about 1,800 people on that page. I have not visited it in a long time. I'm going to get back into that. But with Desert View, we had a yearly event. It was a 5K called Love for Thad. And in 4 years that it ran, we raised over $90,000. We were able to help 137 families, but I could be wrong about that. And we raised a whole lot of awareness. It grew bigger and bigger and bigger each year. And the last year we had a wellness festival with a 5K, and we've really made resources available to people in the community and helped them understand what other resources there were available. Because one thing I really learned is that mental health, the biggest thing to keep yourself mentally healthy is to find your people. Find where you fit in and really get involved with that group, whatever that might be. If you're an artist, go do art with your artist friends. You need connection. Humans need connection. And I really learned the importance of helping people find healthy outlets to get that connection and to help themselves feel better and be comfortable talking about their deepest, darkest concerns and worries, feeling safe, feeling like it's safe to talk to people about their concerns.
Well, and you did an exceptional job of, excuse me, of connecting. Do you think, when you think about other people who are maybe still, and I know that the pain of losing Thad, it's in your life every single day.
Yeah.
But one of the things that, that I find so, empowering about what you do is that you're really transparent about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't hide it. You don't, I mean, it's so funny that you feel like, yeah, you feel like you were ashamed before, and it's almost like he freed you from any of that shame. And now you're just determined to share as frequently as possible to help other people. And I think the human connection piece is, you know, we can't connect with people if we're not being real.
Yep.
I don't think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people asked me toward, like, early on how I was able to share those things, and why I felt the need to. And so I firmly believe that you have to do what is best for you. And what was best for me at that time was to talk about it. And I had this crazy fear within me as well that all of my friends were going to lose their kids. And I did not want that to happen. And I thought if I was as transparent as possible about how it felt to lose a child, as transparent as I could be, there's no words in the dictionary that can fully encompass what it feels like to lose a child. They haven't created those words. And so I did the best I could with the words that I had of explaining what it was like. And I did it for myself. That was my first part, was it felt right to me. But I also did it because I wanted to make sure it didn't happen to anybody else. And it turned into this thing of it kind of turned into this little mini movement. All of my friends started sharing their vulnerabilities and started talking about their deepest, darkest fears. And I guess it gave my sharing gave people permission to share their real. Yeah.
I you and I talked about this when I talked to you on the phone last week about being on the podcast, but I think stories save us. Mm-hmm. I think that, I had somebody here at the house last night and, she read the book and she also had a cancer experience and she started crying. She said, you know, I had no idea that your experience was like this. And she said, I was always afraid to talk about mine because it was so big. I mean, and I think that's what happens. People have these life events that are life changing. And at the time, certainly, they feel like it's life changing, not for the better.
Yeah,
and so they keep it, and I think that's, you know, some of the research I've done is that's part of the, you know, that's part of the anatomy of shame is, if I talk about if something bad happens to me, that makes me a bad person, and we know that's not true.
Right. Yeah.
And so sharing your story is so powerful. You and I can do this. We can have this conversation. This is a conversation that can go on forever. And, but tell me, you know, if you had your, I hate to put a number on it, but tell me your best advice. For parent, what's the best advice you could give parents who have kids who are struggling?
A mentor gave me some advice before Thad passed away, and it's the advice I give to every parent, and I wish I would have taken it more seriously, and that is do whatever it takes to keep your child alive. Don't be embarrassed about counseling. That's a big one. Make sure that there's not something physically going on. Get them to the doctor. Have a physical done. There's all kinds of illnesses and conditions that can really affect your mental health. And so I feel like that's important. But I think one of the biggest things that has been helpful to me and the thing that I'm teaching Malachi and that I wish I would have known when Thad was alive is I'm really working to teach mindfulness. And so we meditate in my family, and that there's just something very, very powerful about meditation. We do affirmations in this house. But people on the outside kind of think we're a little weird, and I wear that like a badge of honor. Because weird is awesome. And
weird is awesome. That should be a hashtag. I love that.
And so it's all about like connecting with them, talking to them. You were a kid once. Remember how hard it was when you were a kid. I think that's important too. I think sometimes we get so angry in the moment that we don't take the time to think about what it is that's really upsetting us. Most often when you're angry with your child, there's a much realer emotion underneath that. And if you can pause to get to that real emotion and then have a conversation with your child instead of screaming or telling them what they should do, don't shut on your kids. Don't shut on them.
That's a great line. Don't should on your kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You shouldn't should.
Yeah, I love that too, not shitting on your kids. And I think that it's, I think a lot of people look at kids or adolescents and they see, you know, we think kids like, oh, everything that happens to them is like the worst thing ever and they're so dramatic. But you know what? That's their reality.
Yes,
and that's what they're
absolutely
going through.
Well, and if you look at like child psychology and I always tie the spirituality in. From 0 to 7, kids are just absorbing everything from their environment. And then from 7 to about 16 or 17, if I remember correctly, that's when they really start to become independent and they're trying to figure out what's right for them. And what's right for them is what's right for them. And that's something else. I feel like we've got to honor what our kids, as long as it's not hurting them, as long as what they're doing, as long as they're not doing anything dangerous, I really feel like we should honor what our kids want to do and who they are as individuals and not try to mold them and force them to be what we want them to be. And I think that's a huge mistake I made with that, because I really wanted him to not make the mistakes I made. And that's not what life is about. Of course, as a kid, he's going to make some of the same mistakes I did, because I'm dumb. I'm a grown-up. And kids know everything at that age, which is perfect for them.
And what would you say to somebody who's lost someone they love to suicide?
First of all, I'm so sorry. That's the first thing I always say. And man, you have a choice in how you react to everything. And there is no judgment on any choice that you make. You have absolutely, especially if you lose a child, you have every right to go hide under your bed for the rest of your life if that's what you want to do. But what I would encourage you to think about is honoring that loved one. I think it's very important, especially with suicide, that people understand that when someone takes their life, they're not thinking about you and what it's going to do to you. They're thinking about how much pain they're in. And they thoroughly believe that them leaving is going to make your life a little bit better. So I guess in that way, we are thinking of you. But they can't see you throughout their illness. They can't see how detrimental they are to your life. So I guess one of the first things I would say is to feel it. Allow yourself to feel the grief. Get into counseling. Really decide how you want to move forward with this. And that's hard at the very beginning. I'm an expert on what I did. And in my experience, us deciding to try to find the gratitude in what happened is what saved us. And I've said for many years that I'm so grateful for the experience of losing Thad, because it made me the person I am today. And I'm a pretty good person.
Oh, you're amazing, Amber. But have you gotten yes. some kickback? I mean, have people, when you say mm-hmm. I'm grateful for that experience, it's a completely different thing than saying it. And people, I would think they don't hear that. They don't. It's just like when I say I'm grateful for the experience of having cancer, right. I'm not grateful that I got cancer. We're not grateful that you lost Thad, but I am really, I'm really mm-hmm. grateful for the experience that I had, because it took me to, you know, what we talked about before, this brave new ending. And we are experts at our own life. Everybody is an expert, but have you gotten some really negative kickback when you say that?
Yeah. You know, I think there's always going to be those people that don't get you.
Right. Always.
Yeah. So I've definitely had those that think that me saying that means that I'm glad my son is dead. And oh my gosh, there could be nothing further from the truth. If I hadn't experienced that extreme loss though, I wouldn't be the person sitting before you today. And I've, you know, some people I've tried to explain it that way to them and they still don't get it. And those just aren't my people. And that's okay.
Right. Right. Hey, I got to say that I'm pretty grateful for learning who my tribe is and who it isn't.
Yes.
You know, yes. That's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, here, because I became kind of a lot of people knew me here. I'm not going to say I was a celebrity or anything like that, but a lot of people knew me here. And I did get some pushback from the community, people that thought they knew me. And thought that I was using my son's death to try to get fame for myself. And
wow. Wow.
It's okay. I, you know, yeah. There weren't people. It was really hurtful at the time to hear that, because at that point in time, that was bad senior, that would have been bad senior year in high school. And I had a really hard time that year. I think that was the worst year for me. And I was so desperate to help more people that that desperation came out when I was doing videos. And that desperation was perceived as me wanting that attention and not me desperately trying to make sure you were safe. But I learned. And that's the beauty of this whole journey.
That's the best thing. I mean, we're constantly learning. Tell us what you're doing now, because I know that you've found this new path and you're giving your professional life a break so that you can do even more things to honor that, is my understanding, because now you and I talked about you sitting down and starting to write about it. Am I telling people too much?
No. Actually, about a year and a half ago, I think, I started a blog called Amber is Real. And I started sharing these stories about that and sharing some stories from my life and my childhood. I learned very quickly that there had been patterns in my life. So that was a fascinating thing to write about and learn about. And now I'm writing a book. And I meet with a medium pretty regularly. And according to her, that is going to help me write this book. In fact, it was him. It was Dad that suggested it first in one of our sessions.
That's so exciting. We're all moving towards, I don't know. It's crazy that knowing how to feed your mindset, knowing how to change your perspective, has given both you and I, I don't know, it's like this whole, it's this entire new life.
Yes.
That surprises me every day.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it gave me back my life force. I felt like, especially for a few years while I was grieving, and if you don't mind, I'm going to rabbit hole a little bit and say that I did not really truly grieve for Thad until his senior year. And I had a breakdown then. I seriously sat on my back porch and stared out into my yard for 2 weeks. I couldn't do anything. And I felt completely apart. And so that's why I think it's really important to allow yourself to feel those emotions. I didn't want to feel it. I was scared to feel it. And I was programmed to believe that crying was weakness. And so I was not honoring my feelings at all. And that's so important. And because of that, that was at year five, so that was a couple of years ago, I felt like I was running on fumes. And when I finally grieved him, and when I finally started applying the tools that I was learning and the lessons that I had learned, it absolutely changed my life. yeah, I have a beautiful life now. Yeah, those tools are important.
I love that. Well, like I said, we could talk about this forever, but we are going to have to stop at some point because we're going to run out of time. But Amber, would you be willing to come back?
Yes.
Let's do this again. Let's talk about how, you know, we continue to write these brave new endings. And, because I know there are other things that we can tell people about mental health that will really be helpful. So, I am so honored that you came and shared this with us today. I mean, every time you tell this story, you help somebody else. There is somebody out there today that needed to hear this story. So thank you so, so much.
Oh, you are so, so welcome. May I say one thing, Bunny?
Sure.
If anybody is struggling with a child or themselves, I am on Facebook. You are welcome to message me. I am happy to talk to anybody that needs help.
Okay. And we'll provide a link to your blog as well.
Perfect.
Yes. Well, when we publicize this, but it's Amber is Real, right?
Yes, amberisreal.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, I love you, friend. Take care.
Love you too.
Thanks so much to Amber Hale for being here and talking with us today. This is a hard topic, but it's really important to remember that stories save us. And Amber tells her story over and over because she feels like it's important to save families that might be about to experience the same thing that she experienced. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast. We're doing this because we think we hope it's helpful. We think hope is hip. We think that stories save us, and we want to help everybody write a brave new ending. So be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Like and review us as often as possible. And thanks so much again for being here. We're all about life-saving gratitude.
If you or anyone you know is experiencing thoughts of suicide or self-harm, you can call the local number that we gave at the beginning. I'll give that again. It's 1-855-662-7474 or 1-855-NM-CRISIS. And National Suicide Prevention Lifeline phone number is 1-800-273-8255. Please do not hesitate to reach out.